Chapter 19, Strange Information About Moonlight and an Audience with the King of the Sunnites. "Well, how do you like Mongolia?" asked Good Fortune, as they sat around the pot, fishing long noodles out of the salty water. "We like it, honored sir," said Big Tiger. "The noodles are good," added Christian. Good Fortune was pleased to hear that, for he was in fact a gifted cook. When he made a fire of camel dung, it burned well from the start. When he rolled the dough, it became thin as rice paper. The rolling pin was only a thick, rounded stick, and the knife with which he cut the strips was just an ordinary knife, but you would think they had been measured with a ruler. To the expert eye, that meant much. Greencoat took no notice of all this. He just ate up the good noodles as quickly as he ate up anything, laid his chopsticks aside, and sat there looking peeved. "Mongolia," said Good Fortune, "is like the sea. A man's heart is low when he's away from it, and swells with joy abounding when he sees the steppe and the stony desert again." Christian and Big Tiger stared at him, and he got red, as if he had let out something he would have preferred to keep to himself. "You should say the red mountains of the desert," remarked Greencoat sarcastically, and Good Fortune became still more disconcerted. "Do you know what nonsense you're talking?" jeered Greencoat. "It's not nonsense," said Big Tiger bravely. "Mr. Good Fortune has spoken very beautiful words about the steppe and the desert." "You impudent young puppy," shouted Greencoat. "How dare you interrupt my conversation, which you do not understand? I should punish you as you deserve." "Do no such thing," warned Good Fortune angrily. "I see already on whose side you are," retorted Greencoat, looking very sinister. "Just think for a bit, and you'll remember, perhaps, where you met that Mongol before." Having said this, Greencoat stood up, stroked his black mustache, and went off towards the truck, where he sat down on a stone in the sun. Good Fortune was grimly silent. He had been merry, but that was now over, for he had to think hard. "Listen, boys," he said. "Weren't you chatting with that Mongol just now? Did he tell you his name?" "If you mean the man who came over with us," began Big Tiger cautiously, "he has a big scar right across his forehead. It looks like a sword cut." "Indeed," said Good Fortune, startled. "I never noticed that." "You can't see the scar right away," Christian explained. "You can see it only if he scratches his head or pushes back his hat." "Well, then it can't be he," said Good Fortune. "Still, I wish I knew his name." "Have Mongols got names as we have?" inquired Big Tiger politely. "No, they haven't got family names as we have," Good Fortune explained. "They only have a name which they get soon after they're born. But it's not much good to them, for most Mongols get a nickname. In the end, a fellow hardly knows himself what his real name is. He only knows his nickname." "Aha," said Christian. "That means every Mongol has two names, his right one and another." "Nearly all of them, or at least a good many," Good Fortune agreed. "I knew a fellow once called Moonlight. He was proud of his name, and he told everyone who wanted to know it, or didn't, that his name was Moonlight. But it was no good. Everyone called him Little Paw." "And doesn't Mr. Moonlight like that? I only mean, I'd like to know why he's called Little Paw." "It's a silly story," answered Good Fortune. "This fellow Moonlight likes a joke, as all Mongols do, and when something happens to him which makes him appear ridiculous, he turns it into something to his credit. A few winters ago, Moonlight was traveling at night with some camels. As his feet were freezing, he got out of the saddle for a while and walked behind. There was a halt, and the whole line came to a standstill. Only Moonlight, who was half asleep, kept on walking until he walked bang into the hindquarters of the last camel, which at once let fly at him, knocking him senseless. Two other Mongols came along and brought him around. "What's wrong?" asked Moonlight. "Why am I lying here looking up at the moon?" "The camel kicked you," they said. "Ah, yes, I remember," said Moonlight. "The good creature wanted to give me its little paw." So ever since, Moonlight has been called Little Paw. But he doesn't like it, and altogether he's a man it's better not to meet."
"Why?" asked Christian.
"Was it he, then?" asked Good Fortune, fixing Christian sharply.
"Who?" asked Big Tiger, feigning surprise. "Do you mean the Mongol with the scar?"
"Oh, of course," Good Fortune said. "I had forgotten the scar. Only for the scar, I'd think that fellow was Moonlight. But it's easy to make a mistake.
Yes, it's very easy, Big Tiger agreed. You're sensible, lad, said Good Fortune. A fellow can talk reasonably to you. So I'll tell you, and it's no secret at all, that this Moonlight is an out-and-out bandit. Perhaps our respected elder would tell us a bit more about him, Christian asked. Yes, but not now, said Good Fortune. Up with you now. We must pack for the road again. When we come to the Edson Gall, remind me. We'll be resting for a day there, and I'll tell you about Moonlight. The journey continued. Greencoat delayed getting in until the last minute. Long after Christian and Big Tiger were in their places, he remained sitting in the same spot, sunk in thought, and as aloof as a stranger. At last, when Good Fortune was starting up, he got in. Not a word was spoken, and Christian and Big Tiger also said nothing. When the cans and the drums were rattling and knocking together, Christian asked Big Tiger whether it would not have been better to have told Good Fortune that the man with the scar was Moonlight. No, said Big Tiger decisively. We promised Moonlight we would be silent. But if he's a bandit... Banditry is an honorable calling, said Big Tiger, and one must keep one's word to honorable men. Besides, Good Fortune has secrets from us. Why should we not have secrets from him? Let's wait and see. There's safety in waiting. Does your teacher say that? No, my grandfather says it. He also often says, youthful folly is rash and brings confusion. My Amma used to say something quite different, Christian countered. She often looked at me and shook her head, saying, youthful folly brings success. All that is long past, Big Tiger dissented gravely. We're men now, and must act as men should. Does that mean we should kill Greencoat? Perhaps. Bator thought it would be necessary. But I can't do it. I can't either, Big Tiger admitted frankly. Then we must let Greencoat live, sighed Christian. Meanwhile, Good Fortune had driven round the hill on which stood the king's houses with their roofs of yellow glazed tiles. The roofs glistened in the sun, but that was all one could see, for they were a long way off, and the heat haze was quivering as on a hot summer day. The dome-shaped mountain top in the west came nearer, and seemed no longer so high. That was because the step was slowly getting higher. Soon it descended, equally gradually, into a broad valley. Then the mountain became big once more, and Christian and Big Tiger, whose eyes had been fixed on it for a long time, noticed the stone shrine on its summit, from which a light-colored pennant fluttered. "That's the Bayan Obo," said Christian, studying the southern sheet. "But now the map is white, and there's nothing more with a name for a long time." "It seems Good Fortune is right. A map like that isn't much use," said Big Tiger. "The general wouldn't have given us the map if it was not useful," Christian objected. Big Tiger had no answer to this, but Good Fortune's prejudice had definitely undermined his trust in the map. Why is there nothing but white when there's a riverbed here? Of course there's no water in it, nothing but stones, but there are green bushes around it, and probably there are wild animals here. Yes, there are, cried Christian excitedly, pointing to a herd of startled antelopes, which at that moment bounded out of the Sharamat thicket. They did not run away, however, but sprang in long bounds, like practiced racers alongside the truck. Good Fortune put up a furious spurt of speed, but from the outset it was a hopeless race for the lumbering truck. The antelopes outraced it with ease, then, leaping high in the air, changed to the other side where they quietly began to graze. The flight was at an end. The car had been overtaken. Obviously, it was not a dangerous adversary. "You see," said Big Tiger, "there are wild animals here, but you can't read that on the map." "There aren't animals on maps," Christian defended himself. "Do you know what those animals are?" "They're antelopes. I know them from pictures," said Big Tiger. "Wherever there are antelopes, there are also wolves." "I'd love to see a wolf," said Christian. "It would be nice to be sitting up in a tree and see one going by underneath." "But there are no trees to go under," said Big Tiger. "Since home in the rocks, we haven't seen a single tree." While Christian and Big Tiger were discussing these important subjects, Good Fortune was driving silently through the steppe, watching the sun for his westerly direction and the ground for the holes made by foxes and marmots. But there were not many holes, and as evening fell there were none at all, and Good Fortune observed that they were not far from a monastery called Orte Gullun Sum. "Why are you suddenly driving so quickly?" asked Greencoat. "Because it will soon be dark." Greencoat was about to reply angrily that he was aware of that, but instead he asked quite civilly whether Good Fortune knew where he was and what the neighborhood was like. "There's a monastery hereabouts," replied Good Fortune, flattered. "We'll get to it in 10 minutes. It's only a small one, but it has 2 good wells, a living Buddha, who is still a child, and friendly monks." "Indeed," muttered Greencoat approvingly, again suppressing what he wanted to say, namely that since Good Fortune was an old Redbeard, it was no wonder that he knew his way about Mongolia better than others, and that that was nothing to boast of. But as he was hatching out a new plot, he held his peace. "Take off that silly grin," said the unsuspecting Good Fortune. "You'll see at once that I'm right," Greencoat replied. He did not doubt it, and was only admiring Good Fortune's knowledge. In the west, the sun was hanging over the jagged peaks of distant mountains. It was big and red like a fiery ball, rolling over a half-finished world. All around were undulations and low hills, which looked as if they might easily be somewhere else tomorrow. The ground was deeply fissured, and the scanty grass seemed a futile attempt to bring life into a region which tolerated none. Apparently it would be withered next day, and one would wake up between boulders of primeval stone and drifts of rippling sand, if indeed one ever woke up. Happily, Good Fortune saw things otherwise. For him the earth was reliably solid, and the step was a racecourse over which to speed. He sounded the horn triumphantly, meaning, "Wasn't I right? We've arrived." Christian and Big Tiger stood up eagerly and peered ahead through the little window. They saw a gray mountain slope, and halfway up to it, 10 or 12 white buildings with flat roofs and red gables. The houses were single-storied, with the exception of one in the center, which towered above the others. Up in that wilderness, it looked like a lead camel surrounded by a lot of frightened white sheep. "There are tents there, too," cried Christian. "And a whole lot of horses near the tents," said Big Tiger, "and they're swishing their tails." Scarcely had Big Tiger spoken than Good Fortune ceased to hoot. He, too, had seen the blue tents and the horses beside them, and he didn't know what to think of them. So he no longer drove quickly, and the truck lumbered hesitantly and more slowly over the great expanse of gravelly ground. The monastery was no more than 500 yards distant, but Good Fortune had suddenly lost all desire to stop the night with the friendly monks. He sat silently, counting the blue tents, and when he had counted 16, he made a rapid calculation. 16 small tents must shelter 150 men, even allowing for a prince and 2 or 3 nobles who would have tents to themselves. Good Fortune was sure they were Sunnit Mongols, people with whom he had never had any contact. But this fellow with the copper-brown face who had come over at midday, what if he were Little Paw? And if so, what was he doing here at Sunnit? Good Fortune looked out the window. To the left and in front stretched the gray, gravelly plain. Then came the mountainside with the monastery on it, and a little distance off the tents and the horses. A few men could be seen walking and standing about. Evidently they had seen the truck. To the right there was a gentle height covered with long grass, and up on it Good Fortune noticed a yurt. He immediately turned the steering wheel, and Christian and Big Tiger almost fell, so sharply did he turn. Then the truck drove quickly up the hill and stopped. Christian and Big Tiger jumped down and stood by the door, but Good Fortune still sat in the driver's cab, with his left arm hanging half out the window, staring at the setting sun. "Is there anything to worry about, honored sir?" asked Big Tiger timidly.
"There's lots to worry about," replied Good Fortune. "But in Mongolia it's no use planning ahead. Things happen as they must. Fetch some water."
"Yes," said Christian. "Has this place a name?"
"It's not a place," replied Good Fortune. "It's a monastery called Orte Golon Suma."
"And all the tents?"
"The tents belong to Mongols," Greencoat suddenly chimed in. "And the Mongols have come here because there's a festival at the monastery. I know that."
"You don't know that," said Good Fortune, "or you don't know it properly. If there were a festival at the monastery, the tents would be much finer tents, and there would be a few yurts here, too. There's no monastery festival at this time."
"Very well," muttered Greencoat. "You know what you're talking about, no doubt. But what do you think is going on up there, you being an old... I mean, have you any idea?"
"I should think," said Good Fortune, "that there's going to be just an ordinary wolf hunt tomorrow."
"Bolna!" shouted Christian gleefully.
Good Fortune turned around astonished. "I hear you speaking Mongolian. Do you know that language?"
"We want to learn it," said Big Tiger, "but it's not easy."
"Fine," said Good Fortune. "Now take the two pails, and if you meet a king up there at the tents, he will be the Baron Sunit Wong. You must make a nice kowtow to him, and then you can speak to him just as you would to me."
Big Tiger got down the pails, while Christian climbed quickly back on the truck and fetched his notebook. Then he went to Good Fortune and asked him to explain the words.
"Barun means western," said Good Fortune, "and Sunit is the name of the tribe. So Barun Sunit Wong means king of the western Sunits."
Christian wrote the words neatly in his book, put it away, and then said, "Now we're going to the king of the western Sunits to fetch water."
"Take a good stout stick," Good Fortune warned him, "for there'll very likely be dogs there, and the Mongolian dogs are nearly as dangerous as wolves."
He went to the driver's cab, lifted the seat, and took out a bamboo stick with a leather thong at the end of it.
"Take this," he said. "It's a riding whip. The Mongols call it a dashyor."
On the way, they discussed serious matters and wondered why Good Fortune, who seemed to know Mongolian, had kept it to himself up till then.
"He spoke only Chinese with moonlight," said Christian. "I took note of that."
"He did that," Big Tiger explained, "because he didn't know for sure whether moonlight was really moonlight, and because he thought moonlight wasn't sure either whether he was Good Fortune or another man. You see, they both distrust each other and are afraid of each other."
"Moonlight isn't afraid at all," said Christian. "He doesn't look as if he was."
"Then it's Good Fortune who's afraid," said Big Tiger.
"He doesn't look afraid either," said Christian.
They went down the slope, and the nearer they got to the valley, the less grass there was.
Finally, the ground was as bare as a threshing floor, and the two wells, which Good Fortune had mentioned, stood out as dark circular spots.
Not far off, on the mountainside, were the Mongols' tents. In front of the white monastery buildings, the horses stood in long rows. They were tied by their halters to cords stretched on poles like washing lines. The last light of day was fading. The stars were coming out one after another, and the moon was up too by the time Christian and Big Tiger reached the wells. They were much the same as the well of the king. Near the first well stood a hollowed-out tree trunk from which a Mongol was taking water. Two other men were coming down the mountainside with several horses. There was no one at the other well, and Christian let down the first pail by a chain which was lying there. The Mongols looked on, nudged each other, and laughed. Christian did not know why. But he soon perceived that the chain clanged at the bottom, and when he pulled the bucket up, it was empty.
"Nashjir!" cried one of the Mongols,
and a note tells us Nashjir means come over here.
Signing to Christian and Big Tiger to join him, he then let down a long rod with a canvas bag at the end of it. When he drew it up, he poured the water into their pails.
"They're full, and we thank you," said Big Tiger politely.
"Bulna!" cried Christian merrily.
This time the word was exactly in place, for it means, "That's right." The Mongols were delighted. One after the other, they put long and elaborate questions to Christian, but he answered not a word. At this, they patted him on the back, saying no doubt he was shy. When he still remained silent, they realized he really could not speak Mongolian. The conversation would have petered out if it had not occurred to Christian that he had learned a new word. Picking up courage, he said distinctly, "Barun Sunit Wong." This had a startling effect, but whether a good or a bad one, it was difficult to see at once. The Mongols clustered together and talked excitedly. At last the man who had drawn the water came and took Christian and Big Tiger each in a friendly way by an ear and said as before, "Nashjir." Christian answered, "Bulna." Then they followed the Mongol up to the encampment. He took their heavy water pails, and Big Tiger, who had been getting nervous, felt his courage return. He looked up at the moon, that mighty comforter of souls, and it seemed to him that they lacked some special word, and if they could find it, all would be well.
"Gui Chan," he whispered, "it can't be helped."
At this, Christian too cheered up. And now they were already in front of the first of the 16 blue tents, which looked, in the pale moonlight, like a collection of black moths which had settled with outspread wings on the light-colored gravelly ground to spend the night there.
The Mongol put down the water pails, signed to Christian and Big Tiger to wait, and then entered the tent. After a little while, he came out again, grinning amiably and saying something which sounded like an invitation. Christian and Big Tiger took hands and entered the tent. It was small, but bright and friendly, and lined inside with white. In the center, a fire was burning in a round iron grate, and a tea kettle was boiling. There were carpets laid to right and left. In the background sat two men, wearing fur hats like moonlights, only more splendid. Christian and Big Tiger kowtowed, murmuring in a low voice, "We wish 10,000 times luck." Then they looked up at the two men, and Christian thought that the older one must be the king. He looked so dignified. But the older man's face suddenly clouded over, and Christian began to hope that the younger man was the king, for he smiled roguishly, and even winked ever so slightly, but said not a word. That made it seem certain that the cross old man was the king, and this seemed specially bad for Christian, at whom he kept looking angrily. This went on for quite a while, until the old man, beside himself with anger, shouted, "Get out, both of you!" "No," said the younger man in beautiful Peking Chinese. "These are innocent boys. They are only inexperienced. I think they are good people." Then he turned to Christian and asked his name. When told it, he said Compass Mountain was a very unusual and beautiful name. "This is Big Tiger," said Christian. "He's my friend." "Ah," said the younger of the two men, "now I know you both. I am the Sunit Wong, and this gentleman is my old cousin. He is angry with Compass Mountain for bringing a whip into the tent. That must not be done." "I did it through ignorance and on account of the dogs," Christian excused himself, throwing the whip out the door. "There is nothing to fear," said the king. "We have no dogs with us, as we are going wolf hunting tomorrow." "Don't you need dogs for that?" asked Big Tiger, astonished. "We Mongols hunt the wolf without dogs," the king explained. "Sit down and drink a bowl of tea with us." "We do not dare," murmured Big Tiger and Christian. But then they sat down, as was correct, on the right-hand side of the tent, near the exit. Their polite behavior made the king's old cousin friendly again. He said one could not always expect the best of manners from foreigners, but fortunately there were exceptions. Then he stood up and led Big Tiger and Christian to the seat of honor on the left-hand side of the king. He himself sat down on the right. The king and his cousin were drinking tea from wooden bowls lined with silver. When they noticed that Christian and Big Tiger had no drinking vessels with them, the old cousin sent for two bowls. Then they talked about the boy's journey to Sinkiang and desired Christian to tell them about life in America. But Christian knew no more about it than the king himself, and much less than the old cousin, who had studied in Peking and was very clever. "We were both born in Peking," Big Tiger explained, "and we have never yet seen the big ocean. We know little of the world." "We traveled in a train for the first time 4 days ago," Christian confessed, "and it ended badly." "No, it ended well," said the king, "for now you have a chance of seeing the steppe and the desert. Nowhere in the world is life so beautiful as here." "Good Fortune thinks that, too," said Big Tiger. "He says Mongolia is like the sea, and that a man is always homesick for it." "Who is Good Fortune?" asked the king. "And where does he come from?" Big Tiger and Christian told all they knew. The king listened attentively and wanted to know everything, and when something did not seem quite clear to him, he asked for further explanation. "There are millions of men in China called Good Fortune," the old cousin commented. "I see no real cause for fear." But the king was not satisfied. "Does this man speak Mongolian?" he asked. "I believe he does," answered Christian. "Then I shall ask Moonlight about him," said the king to his cousin. "He's coming tomorrow morning, before the hunt begins." "We must go now," said Big Tiger, "and we thank you for your hospitality, which we do not deserve." "My child," said the old cousin, "in the steppes hospitality is something which need not be mentioned. My tent is your tent, and my food is your food. That is the way among us. But before you go, show me the ring on your hand." "It's only a snake," said Big Tiger casually. "I wear the ring to counteract the splendor of my name." "Who advised you to do that?" asked the old cousin, examining the ring which Big Tiger passed to him. "A holy man," said Big Tiger. The old cousin bent forward, the better to see the ring in the firelight. As he did so, his face grew sad,
And when he passed the ring to the king so that he might look at it too, there were tears in his eyes. "I believe that ring is a bad ring," said Big Tiger, depressed. "No thing is bad," said the old man. "It is man alone who gives things their meaning and their message. Have you time to hear two words?" "We're in no hurry," Christian assured him. "It's good to hear the experience of the aged," said Big Tiger. 20 years ago," began the old cousin, slowly and solemnly, "I traveled to Urga for the Feast of the Seven States. There I met Yolros Lama, the living Buddha of the Belin Suma Monastery. We were old friends, and we spent happy days together. As I took leave of him, I asked him to let us meet again. 'Only 4 days' travel to the southwest separate us,' answered Yolros Lama. 'Why, then, do you ask that?' I excused myself on the plea of urgent business which called me to Peking. He smiled and said, 'Short distances are the greatest hindrances for friends who desire each other's company. If we are to grow old apart, I will give you a sign. Look at this ring.' He lifted his hand, and I saw the ring which you, Big Tiger, are now wearing on your thumb. 'The ring does not belong to me,' said Yolros Lama. 'One day I must give it back. But before it finds its owner, you shall see it, and then you shall know that I am calling you, because I shall be leaving the world a few days later. Thus we shall see each other again before it is too late.'" The old cousin stopped speaking and wiped away his tears with his sleeve, but they came back again and again. The king returned the ring to Big Tiger. Then he laid his hands on the knees of his old cousin, saying, "We shall ride in an hour. I shall ask the Duke of Hanta to lead the hunt for me. In 2 days and 2 nights we shall be in Belin Suma with Yolros Lama." The old cousin nodded, and Big Tiger and Christian stood up to go. "I must ask you for your generous forgiveness," said the old cousin. "I was unfriendly to you. You, Big Tiger, are the messenger of the holy man Yolros Lama. Accept this bowl as a souvenir of your aged friend, the Duke of Sunit." Saying this, he drew from under his sash a strip of sky-blue silk, laid it over his two palms, placed on it the silver bowl out of which he had drunk his tea, and with bowed head offered it to Big Tiger. "You must take it," whispered the king of the Sunnits, and Big Tiger took it, murmuring, "Thanks 10,000 times." "The haddock goes with it," whispered the king, whereupon Big Tiger accepted the strip of blue silk, too. "Compass Mountain," said the king, "I see you also have no bowl. We Mongols always carry one with us, so that we can be served with food and drink in any tent. Take my bowl for your use, and as a souvenir." And he handed it to Christian, as the old cousin had handed his to Big Tiger, on a strip of blue silk. "Ene yubeno?" asked Christian. A swift smile passed over the king's face, and the old cousin, too, smiled sadly. "The strip of silk is called a haddock," the king explained, "and without it no Mongol may either give or receive a gift. The bowl is called an eich. May you use it during many years of health." Then Big Tiger and Christian thanked them again with a kowtow and were about to go. But the old cousin and the king were quicker than they, both stood up and hurried out of the tent before Christian and Big Tiger. Only when outside did they bid farewells with blessings.